Well, hi again, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. A great new book is out for Jets fans, and you're really going to like this one. It's called If These Wolves Could Talk, Stories from the New York Jets Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box, and it is written by former Jets great player and current Jet broadcaster Marty Lyons, along with Lou Sahadi. And Marty joins me here on the podcast to talk about the new book. Marty, Peter Schwartz, how are you?
I'm doing well, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope all is well with you and your family and the Marty Lyons Foundation. And that is where people can get the book, which is out from Triumph Publishing. You can get the book at MartyLyonsFoundation.org. And proceeds from the book will go towards the Marty Lyons Foundation. And Marty, before we talk about the book, you know, we've talked about your foundation on the show before, but just to give the listeners a refresher, tell me a little bit about the foundation, what it does for these kids, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons why you wrote the book, to try and try and create some proceeds for the foundation.
Well, to be honest with you, Peter, it's the only reason why I wrote the book. I had been contacted by the company out in Chicago, Triumph, to put together a book about the Jets and being there for 40 years, and you know, they wanted to hear some stories about being a player, and then I was very fortunate to host their TV show, and now 19 years doing the radio. And I said, the only way that I would do it and feel comfortable doing it is talk about the foundation and all the kids that I have been able to meet and work with them and their families and try to create hope for them, because I've been doing that for 38 years. I started the foundation when I was 25, very difficult week in my life. My oldest son, Rocky, was born on March 4th. My dad suddenly died of a heart attack on March 8th. And then a little boy that I was a big brother to died at the age of 5 and a half of leukemia. So it was at that point in my life that God challenged me and said, what are you going to do with this ability that I gave you and the platform of playing in the NFL and playing for the New York Jets? And you know, at the age of 25, I decided to start a foundation with the help of Kenny Schroy and the people of the tri-state area. They were kind enough to believe in a 25-year-old football player, and they had, you know, adopted our mission and said, hey, you know what, we're going to support you. And now 38 years later, we operate in 13 states, and we've raised over $35 million, and we've helped over 8,000 families.
And a lot of great events you put on, you know, throughout the year, and now the book is certainly going to help. And I would tell any Jets fan that that even if you know everything about the Jets history, and I've looked at the book, and you know, Marty will attest, you know, I have a pretty good knowledge of the history of the Jets, but you are going to enjoy this book because there's a lot of great stories. When you saw it, when you started to write the book and you started to think about the topics you wanted to discuss in the book, you know, what were the first couple of things that came to mind? I wrote down some of the chapters I want to talk about, but for you, obviously, what were the, you know, the first couple of subjects about the Jets, and you've been with them for 40 years now, as you mentioned, what were the first couple of things you really felt these two things have to be in the book?
Well, number one, I wanted to talk about Joe Klecko and what a great teammate he was and how he should be in the Hall of Fame and everything that he did to help support me as a player and, more importantly, support me as a friend. So I wanted to write about Joe. I wanted to write about all the coaches that I've learned from and the experiences that I've had talking to the coaches. And then some of the players that I played with, and especially a guy like Dennis Byrd. I think that Dennis was a tremendous football player, but he was a better man. And when he got drafted in that draft, you know, where they took like four defensive linemen in the first six picks, I knew my time with the Jets was going to be up relatively quick. You could tell by the draft that they were going to get younger on the defensive line position. I was in my 11th year and trying to really hold on. You know, the body tells you, I don't know how much more you can do. Your mind's telling you, hey, I can still play. And, you know, in my 12th season, I blew out my bicep and went back in there to talk to Dick Steinberg. And at that time, the head coach was Bruce Coughlin. And they were honest with me. They said, we're Mm-hmm. I said to myself, hey, you came with Quest, why don't you retire with Quest? And that's what I did. And, you know, and then the next big option was, well, what are you going to do with life after football? And I said, you know, I started the foundation in 1982. I can't walk out on all these families. Mm-hmm. I can't walk out on the volunteers. So I made my life up here in New York, and I have no regrets.
And one of the first broadcasting things you did for the Jets was Jets Journal, which was, you know, if you were a Jet fan, you were up late on a Saturday night and you needed to know what was going on. I mean, that was the place, you know, before all these other shows popped up, all the pregame shows, you know, SNY does a lot of Jets coverage now. But, I mean, you and Al Troutwig on that Jets Journal show was phenomenal.
Well, you know what? I appreciate that, but Al Troutwig was the best to work with.
He was. He's great.
It's just like anything, Peter. If you enjoy working with your partner, like Bob Wischusen is great to work with. Al was great to work with. He, you know what? He was very patient with me. He was very understanding with mm-hmm. me, and he taught me the trade. And I owe a lot to Al. Even when I made that transition from, you know, doing the TV show to now having an opportunity to do the radio, Al was one of the first guys I talked to. I said, Al, you know what? What's the big difference? How do you make that transition? He said, just remember, when you're on the radio, pretend you're talking to a blind person.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you have a blank canvas painted for your listeners. He goes, when you're on the radio, sometimes you don't have to, you know, be totally right, but give the details where they can close their eyes, and you can paint the picture of exactly what's happening.
We're talking to Marty Lyons, former Jets great defensive lineman, and now a longtime radio voice of the Jets. He has a new book out now with Lou Sahadi from Triumph Books. It's called If These Walls Could Talk, Stories from the Jets Sideline Locker Room and Press Box. And the proceeds for the sales of the book will go to the Marty Lyons Foundation. You can get more information on that at MartyLyonsFoundation.org. You start the book with a chapter about the birth of the Jets, and you've been with the Jets for 40 years, but obviously the birth of the Jets predates your time with them, and from being with them for such a long time, you've grown to have an understanding and a love for the history of this franchise. How cool was it to write the chapter about how it all began for the Jets as the Titans in 1960?
Well, you know what, Peter? You got to give all that credit to Lou Sahadi. Lou and I have been friends for over 40 years, and he's a historian about the game of football, about the NFL, about the AFL. So that was all Lou.
Uh-huh.
Lou jumped into that, and you know what? He painted an understanding of how the AFL actually merged with the NFL, and I thought he did a great job doing it. And I found it very fascinating myself to read.
You know, there was a time for a few years where the Jets wore, as a throwback, they wore the old Titans uniforms for a couple of games a year. And I may be in the minority about this, but I thought it was a really cool look for the team to wear those a couple of times. Did you like them, and how would you have felt when you were playing if the Jets decided to wear those a couple of times a year?
Well, you know what, Peter? I always think that we should respect history.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? When the Jets wore it, it was remembering all those men that wore the Titan jersey that went out there and played hard. And you know, so I think it was a tribute to each and every one of them, and I think if we do that more often, not just on the playing field, but we remember the history, the good things that have happened, I think we'll be better off.
No question about it. You're right about the 81 and the 82 seasons, and listen, I'll speak for myself. You know, growing up a Jets fan, I mean, you know, at that time for me, those two seasons were magical, back-to-back, you know, trips for you guys to the playoffs. The 81 season, you know, had a, you know, a little bit of everything in it. Had the, you know, the great, you know, win over the Dolphins at Shea to move it to first place, and you make the playoffs on the last game of the season with the win against the Packers at Shea. And I was at that game with my uncle, and the upper deck was shaking. But there was the heartbreaking loss to the Bills You know, in the playoffs in the following year, you get deep into the tournament and you lose to the Dolphins in the AFC Championship game. But, you know, for a lot of Jet fans, you know, growing up during that time, those 2 years were just so great. And Shea was rocking during those couple of seasons. When you think back, obviously, you know, not getting to the Super Bowl and not winning it certainly was a disappointment. But when you think back on those two seasons, is it a more happy memories or sad memories about that?
Well, you know what, Peter, I think they're all happy memories, even some of the seasons that we went 4-12. You know, you're disappointed as a football player, but, you know, the friendship and the bond that you made with the guys in the locker room that can last a lifetime, that's what the game of football did. It brought these complete strangers together, and we were all fighting for the same cause. And just because we came up a little short didn't mean that our best effort wasn't out there. We just weren't good enough sometimes. And I compare, you know, we started off that season in the 81 season. We started off 0-3. The Jets are 0-3 now. Our point differential back in 1981 was 54 points. Their differential is 57.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we turned it around in week 4 because we beat Houston. And then the following week, we tied the Dolphins. But if the Jets can get one victory and they can start feeling good about themselves, maybe good things will happen. You know, and I think that that's what they got to do on Thursday night against, you know, Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to come out and do whatever you have to do to win. And if you win by one, that's great. If you win by more than one, it's still a victory.
Mm-hmm. As long as you brought up the current Jets, let me you know, ask about it. Obviously, you mentioned it's a rough start to the season at 0-3, but I wanted to ask you your general thoughts on the roster. Obviously, you know, Sam Darnold was drafted, you know, third overall a couple of years ago, and you know, he has shown some flashes of brilliance. He's also shown flashes of being a young quarterback. Let me start with him. What have your thoughts been on watching him play every game since he came to the Jets?
Well, you know, Peter, I like Sam. I like him as a person. I like him as a quarterback. I like him as a leader. And sometimes it's very hard to evaluate his performance because of the supporting cast. And, mm-hmm. and I say that in all due respect to the guys that are out there. But you know what? He doesn't have the weapons that a lot of other teams have in the NFL. So, you know, it's hard to judge him. I think that Joe Douglas did a tremendous job going out and rebuilding the offensive line during the offseason. But now he has to get the skilled players, the game breakers, the game changers. And then I think if all that supporting cast is around Sam, then we can evaluate him with an open mind. Right now, you know, he has struggled because the team has struggled.
Right.
He's only one player. You need the other 10 guys to go out there and execute the play just as well as he does. You need the pass protectors, and you need those guys blocking up front. But when he does make a good throw, you need the guy to catch it. You can't go and miss the ball and then pat the front end of your shoulder pads and saying, hey, my bad, my bad. No,
right.
You go from a possible first down to 3rd and 10.
Yeah.
You're not giving your teammates an opportunity to be successful. So I think everybody, you know, you win as a team, you lose as a team, and everybody has to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, what can I do better?
I think they have to get Chris Herndon involved a little bit more. I mean, here's a guy that's got all the ability in the world at tight end, and you mentioned the lack of playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, but to me, it looks like they just got to try and figure out a way to get the ball in his hands a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, you got Chris Herndon and you got Ryan Griffin. You got two good tight ends that can, you know, definitely operate in the middle of the field. But so far in the first 3 games, we haven't seen the results that everybody anticipated. I think it's also a result of the pandemic that we're in, you know, with no mini camps, no training camp, no preseason game. So I would look at this week's game against Denver and say, hey, this is the 4th preseason game. You know, the first 3, we're going to throw out. We're going to start the season over today.
What have you seen from the defensive side of the ball? Obviously, Joe Douglas pulled the trigger on the Jamal Adams trade, you know, during the offseason to get, you know, some picks back, and, you know, Marcus May has stepped in. You know, they got Bradley McDougal in that deal, and, you know, up front, I think Quinnen Williams has shown that he's made a lot of strides from last year. Do you see some progress in this Jets defense over the first three games?
I do, and then I don't. You know, the progress that I see has to be consistent. You know, for example, Quinnen Williams has his best day as a pro 2 weeks ago against the 49ers. You got to come back and back that game up with another good game against the Colts. And then you have to back it up again to another good game against the Broncos. You can't have a good game, bad game. You know, and I think the one thing that we're seeing is a lot of missed tackles and missed assignments. And that's just because there's so many new faces out there on the offensive side and the defensive side. They're trying to get used to one another. They're trying to communicate with one another. But, you know, tackling is an attitude. You've got to have an attitude that, hey, here's a guy coming one-on-one. I can't duck my head. Lock your eyes in on the middle part of his belt and know that, hey, where the middle of the body goes, so does the ball. And keep your head up, keep your eyes up, and tackle the guy. And you know what? Missed tackles results in those yards after contact, and they're just giving up too much. And the other thing is, Peter, you can't play from behind. Mm-hmm. You talked about that 81-year season. You know, we went into the playoffs. We were all pumped up. Shea Stadium was rocking. I mean, I remember looking up there at the stands, and the ones in the end zone, they were actually moving.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffalo kicked off to us, and we fumbled the ball on the kickoff. They picked it up and ran it back for a touchdown. Within 10 seconds, we're down 7-0.
Yeah.
And that happened to the Jets the last 2 weeks. You know, the first play against the 49er, they go for 80 yards, they're down 7. Last week, the sixth play of the drive, he throws a pick 6, they're down 7. You can't give away points in the NFL and think you can win.
Let me close with this. It's been a challenging, you know, number of months here for everybody dealing with you know, COVID-19. You know, the coronavirus pandemic has really done a number on everybody. It's had its effect on sports as well. And now that you're on the side of the fence where you're covering a team, what's been the challenge like for you and, you know, for Bob with Shoes, and, you know, not having the same kind of access that you've had before to try and get to know, especially the new players, to get to know them, to do everything over Zoom, and you know, just to not have the same access that you've had for so many years before? What has the season been like so far for you?
Well, it's been challenging, Peter, I'd be honest with you. You know, we do the games, the away games. We don't travel with the team. And normally, if we traveled with the team, you get to interact with the coaches, interact with the players. You get to go down on the sidelines, go down on the field, go in the locker room, and you can have your one-on-ones. You get more of an insight. But, you know, we're making the best out of what we have to work with. And I think that's a compliment to the chemistry that Bob and I have. We have Joe Lochran. He's been with the team for a long time as our producer. Chris Gargano's doing an excellent job. Eric Gelfand. They're all doing an excellent job so that we can try to entertain our fans that are listening and paint the picture for them and be that extension to the team that we're supposed to be. And, you know, hopefully the product and the performance by the Jets will get better as the weeks go on. But win or lose, you know, I'm always a Jet fan, and, you know, I always believe that there's more important things than the game of football. And another reason why I wrote the book was to let people know that football wasn't going to define who I am.
And
I take them on, you know, on an inside look of what it's like to be in a intensive care unit, and what it's like to see a 6-year-old boy or a 6-year-old girl on life support, and, you know, what it's like to lose them.
The book is If These Walls Could Talk: Stories from the New York Jets Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box, written by Marty Lyons and Lou Sahadi. And Marty has been my guest here on Schwartz on Sports. Marty, thanks as always for taking some time to join me on the show. And, you know, best of luck with the book, and hopefully, you know, a lot of Jet fans will buy it and raise a lot of money for the Marty Lyons Foundation, and people can get all the information at MartyLyonsFoundation.org. Marty, good to call you a friend, and thanks a lot for joining me on the show.
You got it, Peter. My pleasure. And you don't have to be a Jet fan to buy the book.
That's true.
All you have to do is, you know what? You know, there's a lot of life lessons in there that I believe that we can all learn from. Because certainly I've learned a lot by working with these kids, and it was an honor to pay tribute to them.
Yeah. It's a great read for everybody, but I know a lot of the Jet fans are looking for something interesting to read, and it's for a great cause. If these walls could talk, from Marty Lyons and Lou Sahadi, it's available from Triumph Books, and again, MartyLyonsFoundation.org. You can order it there as well. All the proceeds go to Marty's Foundation. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for listening to this edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. We thank our guest, Marty Lyons. We'll catch you again next time, and please stay safe, everyone.